some state Democrats are advancing a bill that would legalize physician-assisted suicide in Wisconsin. The proposal would apply to mentally capable, terminally ill adults who have fewer than 6 months to live. Supporters say it gives people a way to end life on their own terms. Opponents say it undermines the primary role of doctors as healers. Nine states and the District of Columbia allow physician-assisted suicide. We'll hear from a critic of the plan in just a little bit. First, we'll talk to one of the bill's sponsors. Fred Risser is a Democratic state senator from Madison. Senator Risser, thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
Well, can you talk about the specifics of how your bill would work?
Well, I have introduced a bill called End of Life Options Act. It applies only to those who are terminally ill and will go through the safeguards which the bill sets up. The bill provides, for example, that there has to be a diagnosis by several physicians. There's both a verbal and written request with some time in between. There's witnesses involved. If there's any mental health problems, the mental health doctor's called in. Actually, what it does, it just makes possible one option for a person who is terminally ill, and that option is to secure help by a physician in terminating his or her life.
Can you talk about the need for legislation like this in Wisconsin?
This is an option. This is not a requirement. It is an option that some people want. Actually, having this option, this legal option, is a peace of mind to a lot of people that are in good health because they do not want to be forced to suffer the last several years, last several months of their life. Actually, 10 states now have this on their books, 10 states and Washington, D.C. The state of Oregon has had this on its books since 1997, over 20 years, and it's worked very well. Again, I want to emphasize that this is an option. It only applies to those people who want to have it apply to them. And quite frankly, it is a sort of a peace of mind to some people that are in good health that they know that society will not force them to suffer if they end up their life that way.
What does this allow doctors to do to assist that patient who wants, that the terminally ill patient who wants to end their life?
It would give a doctor an option to provide medicine that would allow the patient to go to sleep and just not wake up.
And what protections does this offer to doctors? I know there's a concern that providing that kind of medication could open doctors up to liability.
Well, doctors do not have to do it if they don't want to. And you say doctors' liability. That's why we have a law to provide that this could happen. In other words, the law will provide safeguards for a doctor who wants to provide the necessary end-of-life medication. Let me point out that, in reality, a patient who's dying can die on their own. They just have to stop eating the food and stop their medicine. So they really have their own option to do that now. But this would provide that a doctor could provide medicine to help the patient go to sleep at the time the patient wants to go to sleep.
Talking to Senator Fred Risser, Democratic State Senator from Madison, about new legislation he's proposing, reproposing actually on the end of life care for patients in Wisconsin. I want to bring up some of the objections people have had to this idea here and elsewhere, Senator Risser. One being that doctors are there to heal people, to make people better, not to assist them in dying. It's contrary, they say, to the mission of medicine. What do you say to that argument?
The argument, I think, is answered by the fact that that's true, and that's why we have legislation to make it possible. Now, a doctor does not have to provide the services if they don't want to, but it gives a doctor the opportunity. You know, right now, doctors can prescribe, for instance, morphine to a patient. Morphine often speeds up one's passing. There's other ways that are happening, and doctors, I guess, have ways of providing medicine that will help the patient. And this, if there's any question as to whether a doctor is doing something legal or not, this bill provides that this option is available. And it does hold a doctor who participates in this procedure free from liability.
There's also been concern that family members or others might pressure a patient to make this decision to end their lives for the convenience of their family members, to people worried about financial expenses, things like that. Is it possible that other concerns might get in the way and lead to outcomes that we don't want?
That option has been argued, but statistically, studies have been made, especially in Oregon, for example, that has had this on the books for 20 years, that isn't the case. Oftentimes, the patient who is dying would like to meet with his loved ones prior to his death, and this permits a patient to sort of set up timing. This is only applies to one who wants to do it and only applies in case of a termination of death. The patient's going to die anyway, and do you want society to force the patient to suffer if the patient doesn't want to suffer? Shouldn't a patient have the right to self-determination? In a free society, self-determination is something that we treasure. And someone who knows they're going to pass away and is suffering should have the option, I suppose, to stop eating or to have a doctor give him a prescription so that he can fall asleep without pain.
You've proposed similar legislation in the past. Do you think that things are changing such that it has a chance of passing this time around?
You know, there's no question that the population supports this. A Gallup poll in 2018 showed 72% public support. Every poll taken on the subject shows the majority of the public support this. As I pointed out, Oregon has had this on the books for 20 years. It's worked very well. Now, 10 other states in Washington, D.C. have legalized medical aid in dying, and it's worked well. We've heard no complaints from any source. The bill sets up many safeguards for the patients so that we don't have the problems. Without the bill, there's problems that can occur.
Senator Risser, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Right. We just heard from Democratic State Senator Fred Risser on why Wisconsin should follow suit. Now we welcome a different perspective. Cynthia Jones-Nosechek is a recently retired doctor who practiced family medicine, obstetrics, and hospice in Milwaukee. Dr. Jones-Nosechek, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's good to be speaking with you.
Why do you see this as a bad idea?
Well, there's several reasons. You know, the first is that Senator Risser's right. You know, you don't need physicians to let patients take their own lives. There are plenty of organizations out there that if you want the information, they're more than happy to give it to you. What they're really looking for is that medicine give its blessing, because what's legal for most people is also moral. The second problem is that doctors are really poor in terms of determining whether or not a person has a terminal illness. You know, they say 6 months or less. It's an educated guess. You know, I've had patients that have outlived their hospice benefits. They've lived so much long past the time that we said they were going to die that they actually ran out of their benefits. Thirdly, when they talk about a terminal diagnosis, they mean it's terminal if they don't get treatment. So, for example, a patient could have cancer that's potentially curable, like a lymphoma, where a friend of mine has lived for over 20 years after treatment. If they decide they don't want the treatment, they just consider them terminal, and they're eligible to be assisted in dying. Insulin-dependent diabetes is included as a terminal diagnosis, which means my daughter, who has type 1 diabetes, has been terminal for over 30 years. They talk so much about the safeguards, but realize that in Oregon, it's self-reported. They've even admitted that they could get a, quote, cock and bull story, unquote, from the doctors, and they never would even know it unless somebody else would report it. We're not trusted anywhere else as much as this.
Well, as we heard from Senator Risser, in addition to the medical evaluation, the legislation as it stands in Wisconsin would require 3 independent witnesses to witness this and confirm the patient's and doctor's story. Would that be at least somewhat of a safeguard for as you say, that sort of made up story?
No, because the witnesses are dependent on what the doctors are saying. And if the doctors don't know that this patient is terminal for sure, and we don't, then, they're just signing to something that's really an educated guess.
What kind of things, having worked in a hospice care, what kind of things would you tell a patient who sees themselves probably having a terminal illness, maybe considering this option of assisted suicide? What would you present to them as their options?
Well, I would tell them that I'm there to care for them, to help them through, that this is an opportunity for me to serve them. I mean, one of the biggest reasons that people fear the end of life is they fear that they're going to be a burden on people. I mean, I know Senator Risser has said there's no evidence of this. But actually, if you look at the Oregon data, it's the number four reason. Over half of the patients who say they're going to take advantage of this have said that the reason they're doing it is because they don't want to be a burden.
Some people have argued that it allows people to choose the conditions of their own passing. They look ahead at treatment that might or might not work, that carries side effects with it, maybe 6 months or 12 months or whatever of suffering. Why not be able to pick the time of their own death and have medical treatment to make sure that is as comfortable as possible?
Well, for one thing, the state is the one that determines when you can ask. So if it's 12 months, too bad. If it's 7 months, too bad. If it's 6 months, yeah, you're right. Your life isn't worth living. And if you want to die, you can die. It's telling the patient that we value them for what they can do and not for who they are. And it's a bad way of telling people who are disabled that, you can't control your bowel movements, if you need people to care for you, that's a reason to die.
Do you worry that patients would hear these messages and make a decision contrary to what they see as their own best interests?
I can see that they would, yes. There's one thing to support a patient in making that decision. There's another thing to coerce. And once everybody signed off on the paperwork, you can't tell what happens after that. And it's really a fine line between support and coercion. Also, we don't even know the competency of the person at the time that they take the medication. Yes, they have to be able to make decisions at the time they make the request, but that doesn't mean that they were able to do so at the time that they took the meds.
We're talking to Dr. Cynthia Jones-Nasuchek, a recently retired doctor who practiced family medicine, obstetrics, and hospice in Milwaukee. We're talking about physician-assisted suicide. We heard a few moments ago from Wisconsin State Senator Fred Risser, who's reintroducing a bill that would allow, under certain conditions, physicians to provide assistance to terminally ill patients seeking to end their own lives. You can join in with your thoughts on this issue at 800-642-1234. We'll bring on a caller now. Lisa is with us in Amberg. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I called in originally to sort of discuss the possible risks of allowing this, but your fine doctor has really infuriated me. I was an RN. I know I'm not a physician, but I was an RN, and I specialized in oncology. And for she talks about doctors being notoriously not wrong about not knowing when people would die. In some respects, she's correct, but the fact that they may not know when somebody is going to die is not necessarily the same thing as not knowing that they're going to die. There are a minute amount of people who survive once they've been given a terminal diagnosis, when they know that it is truly a terminal diagnosis. And I'm not talking about things where, like diabetes, where it is easily treatable. I'm talking about people who choose not to have chemo because it makes them so violently ill or it destroys their bodies, and they decide that they would rather spend their time with their family and not be sick every minute of the day until they die. And they make that choice themselves. I cannot believe how angry I'm over this.
Lisa, thanks for the call, Dr. Jones, on the subject. Obviously, an emotional issue for a lot of people. Is there a category, again, not that patient with diabetes who could be treated, but a category of people with particularly severe forms of cancer where this might be a better option?
Well, first off, there's no distinction in the law. It just says you have to have a terminal condition. And the state of Oregon has even admitted that type 1 diabetes is covered under their assisted suicide laws. Secondly, I agree with the caller. I mean, there are times when the treatment is worse than the disease. And at that time, you withdraw the treatment and you treat them in other ways. You give them comfort. You care for them. You walk with them and through those days. But you don't kill them.
Thanks for the call, Lisa. We saw a column written by another doctor who agreed with you, Dr. Jones-Nasuchik. He also raised the concern that insurance companies might push for cheaper life-ending medication rather than expensive, potentially expensive continuing care. Is that a concern you share?
Yes, I do, and there have already been cases of that. There were at least two cases in Oregon where people were denied life-prolonging treatment and told, oh, by the way, since you're going to die now, we can give you the pills. Dr. McAllister in Nevada had a similar case where a patient was denied life-prolonging treatment. And again, reminded that since you're going to die now, you can always take the pills and do it quicker.
Let's bring on another caller. Shelley joins us in Spooner. Shelley, hi.
Hi. Yeah, a couple of things. I agree that it can be a real slippery slope when you're thinking about quality of life and ending someone's life, you know, with the right of a patient making that decision or, you know, society or, quite frankly, business and profit, you know, trying to make those decisions for a patient and what's considered quality of life and when to end a life. However, some of the explanations that this physician is giving are really overgeneralized. You know, there's in hospice, there's a, you know, very specific, it isn't just diagnosis. There's a timeline of 6 months or less. There is a certification, not just under cancer, but that a doctor has to show that that treatment is no longer beneficial to a patient. I mean, that they're literally just not responding to curative or even, you know, some palliative care treatment in cancer. There's also signs and symptoms that are very clear about a patient's timeline as far as how close they're coming to dying. There's, you know, whether it's, you know.
Shelley, I'm going to jump in because we're close to out of time. Dr. Jones-Nasuchik, do we have those kind of criteria? Would they be in place under this law?
Okay. Well, first off, she's wrong in terms of saying that there's no other treatment available. According to the state of Oregon, they have to admit that they have been offered other options for end of life, and this is the one that they're choosing. So there are always options. Secondly, she was talking about, again, that there's very definite signs. Studies have shown that we're most accurate within 3 days. So I we've got data, and I could tell you that she'll probably be dead within the next 72 hours. After that, no, it becomes the farther you get away from there, 3 days, the less accurate you become. You could say, in general, so many people survive for 6 months, but that doesn't mean everybody is dead at 6 months. And there are always those people that survive longer than you think they're going to survive.
Thanks for that call. Briefly, as we wrap up, Dr. Jones-Nasuchik, what do you want to hear state lawmakers, or what do you want to have state lawmakers hear when it comes to this argument if this were to come to the Senate floor?
This is bad patient care. You know, physicians are healers. We're not killers. And we should not be the ones to determine that someone's life is no longer worth living. Instead, as a physician, I always told my patients that my goal was to help them live as full a life as possible with the time that they've been given.
Dr. Jones-Nasuchik, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Cynthia Jones-Nasuchik is a recently retired doctor who practiced family medicine, obstetrics, and hospice for more than 30 years in Milwaukee most recently. We talked to her about her opposition to a bill that would allow for physician-assisted suicide here in the state. Earlier, we heard from a sponsor of the plan, Democratic State Senator Fred Risser.